Hey, hey, this is Teresa Matsura, and you're listening to Uncanny Japan. What do you know about kitsune, Japanese foxes? I'd venture to say a lot. We find foxes everywhere. Games, manga, anime, artwork, guarding shrines, possessing people. I've been asked to do an episode on foxes, and I will. But first, let me tell you about what I'm loving a little more than a fox at the moment. The wolf. Or okami in Japanese. Now let me ask you that same question differently. What do you know about Japanese wolves? Maybe not so much? Well, let's fix that for you today. Let me tell you what I've discovered about these stoic, beautiful, and incredibly sadly, now extinct creatures. Keep listening. Would you like to explore the stranger, more obscure corners of Japanese culture? Dig a little deeper into superstitions, curious customs, and all those mysterious creatures that inhabit the land? If so, then this is the podcast for you. Uncanny Japan is where I, author Teresa Matsura, share all the fascinating tidbits I unearth while doing research for my writing. From the bizarre to the ghastly and everything in between. I hope you enjoy the show. Hello there, how are you? Have I told you how fantastic my patrons are recently? The other day, new patron B came up with a brilliant idea that I want to share. Does everyone know about Inktober? It was created by Jake Parker, an artist who wanted to help other artists to challenge themselves, improve their skills, and just get into the habit of creating something regularly. Originally, back in 2016, it was only ink drawings. But then as it took off, it expanded to any medium. The idea is simple. You spend some bit of time every day drawing something related to one of his prompts. This goes on for every day in the month of October. Then you share it on the social media platform of your choice with the hashtags Inktober or Inktober in the year, and everyone can click around and see neat things. It turns out it is a lovely way to, yes, challenge yourself, but also to meet other artists and to get a little inspiration. Jake Parker has already put up his own list of daily prompts over on his site, but I have heard of people riffing off the idea in all sorts of ways. And that's where Bee comes in. She went through and she made a list of 31 different yokai or ghosties from 31 different Uncanny Japan episodes, and linked each one of them to one of the days of the month. Then she said, "What do you think about doing this?" Sam, remember from last episode, said that there is actually a hashtag Yokaitober, which is cool too. They've already got their list up too. But what I really liked about Bee's idea is that she connected each yokai or ghostie with an episode of the show, so that if you'd like, you can listen to it, get in the mood of the creature, and then create your masterpiece. And then you can share. Let's use hashtag UncannyTober. Why not? Let's make October weird. I'll put up a separate page on the website called UncannyTober 2022 that will have Bee's list and links to the various shows. Richard also had a really good idea and mentioned that if you want, using the art with links back to the creator on each of the episodes being referenced. So for example, if that day is Tsuchinoko and you don't mind, we could use your Tsuchinoko with a link back to you on that blog post. Just let us know if you're cool with that. Anyway, I'm going to try it out. I'm not an artist by any stretch, so you don't have to be shy about sharing either. I'd love to see everyone's takes on the prompts. Okay, let's tiptoe back to our wolves. Wolf history and lore can get confusing, especially since, like I said, they're no longer around anymore. so I'll try not to wander too much into the weeds. However, this is going to be a two-parter, because you have the wolf-wolf, the actual animal, and then you have all the folklore and the worship of them. There's a lot to the wolf. But first, let's start where we always start, with the name, Okami. If you're familiar with Japanese, you'll notice it sounds like big god, Okami. It's not actually, it's a different character. Although there is, of course, the thought that that's where it came from originally. These stoic animals are associated with godliness, as well as being messengers for the gods. A side note, it has been suggested that the wolf was the messenger of the mountain gods, while the fox was the messenger of the rice field gods. If you look at the Japanese character for wolf, Okami, it's a single kanji that consists of two parts. The left is called Keimono-hen, or the radical for wild animal. And on the right is Ryo, the character for good. A good animal. Isn't that sweet? Characters and names change through the ages, and some beliefs as to the original meaning are great spirit, big god, big dog, big bite, or big mouth. Another is a variation of Oguchi no Makami, the true god with the big mouth. That's my favorite. I'll talk a little more about that one in just a minute. But you'll also hear and read about something called the Yama Inu, or mountain dog. There is a bit of controversy about that one. Is a Yama Inu another name for wolf? Or were they literally just wild dogs that lived in the mountains? I think I read for an entire day about the arguments back and forth before I finally stopped. I will, though, mention that one certain Ono Ranzen, who wrote a book about natural studies in 1803 called Honzo Komoku Keimo, and in it he said that the Okami is an edible, grayish-brown animal with a long ash-colored, white-tipped tail and webbed toes. It also has triangular eyes. But the Yama Inu, while similar, has speckled yellowish fur, unwebbed toes, and also it smelled really bad, and you couldn't eat it. The thing is, even if they were different animals, the words Okami and Yama Inu are often used interchangeably. And you'll also sometimes hear Oinu-sama, which is putting all the honorifics on the word dog. You can see how revered they were just from the naming. Next, there were two distinct breeds of Japanese wolf. The Honshu wolf, which lived on the big island of Honshu, as well as Shikoku and Kyushu. And then the Hokkaido wolf, or Ezo wolf, which roamed the northernmost island of Hokkaido and the Russian island north of that, Sakhalin. They were both subspecies of the gray wolf. Another thing was that the Japanese wolves were smallish. Not the smallest wolves in the world, but definitely on the smaller side. For example, an Alaskan wolf can weigh up to 60 kilograms. The Honshu Okami was about 15. The Hokkaido variety was also a little bigger than that. Speaking of Hokkaido wolves, the Ainu, the indigenous people of Hokkaido, worshipped the wolf as a deity called Horkyu Kamui, the howling god. One Ainu myth says that the Ainu people came about when a white wolf hooked up with a goddess. The Ainu had quite the reverence for their wolves. There are stories about how hunters would leave some of their kill for the wolves to eat, how the Ainu would sometimes raise wolf cubs to actually become their hunting companions, how you couldn't kill a wolf with a poison arrow or a gun, and if you wasted the animal's pelt or the meat, other wolves would come to take revenge. Okay, let me back up a minute and tell you a fascinating, true story about how the Okami came across my radar in the first place. But also, it shows how even though the wolf has been extinct since 1905, they're not forgotten and they're still revered. I had a student and a friend who is in his early 70s, and he told me this story about his daughter and what happened to her when she was really small. It goes that as a baby, she used to cry, especially at night. He and his wife were worried about her, but all the trips to the doctor said that she was physically fine, just a baby who cried a lot, and she would grow out of it. But it went on. She eventually got to the age when she could talk, and she started telling her parents that she was afraid of the dog that followed her around. They didn't have any pets, and they had never seen any strays around the house, so that really concerned them. They asked for some more details, and she eventually told them that at night a dog would show up at her window or in her room, and it scared her. Now her parents were really concerned. I'm not sure how they determined it, but it was decided that the dog was actually a fox or a fox spirit. It was a kitsune being a jerk. Or worse, trying to possess her. What would scare a fox away? Why, a wolf, of course. They found an old wolf shrine, not an easy task in and of itself, but it was right here in this prefecture. It was quite hazardous to get to, though. My friend said that the very first time they went, this is all pre-cell phone, no signs, no maps, just the directions from a Shinto priest. They drove and drove, and they got terribly lost in the mountains. At one point, they thought they were almost there, but the road split, and even though there were no houses anywhere up in the mountains, there was an old woman sitting at the fork in the road. They said they all got goosebumps. What was she doing there? Where was she from? But they stopped and asked, and she pointed them to the correct way. After that, they reached the shrine slash temple and paid it a visit. There they prayed and bought an ofuda protective talisman. And that night, they hung it by her bed. And he said, no exaggeration, from that moment, the night crying stopped. And it stayed stopped. And her demeanor changed, too. When they asked, she said that the fox had gone away. My friend said they continued to go to the shrine, which really is a harrowing drive because I went there, every year to buy a new talisman or a new ofuda for many years. So that was the story that got me thinking about wolves in the first place. It also got me to make my own trek to that shrine, but I'll talk about that later. Wolves. Here is how Edwin Dunn described the northernmost one, the Hokkaido wolf, in his unpublished memoirs. The Hokkaido wolf is a formidable beast, but not dangerous to man as long as other prey is to be had for the killing. During the winter months, at the time of which I am writing, they lived mostly upon deer, which were very plentiful. During the summer, their diet was principally horse meat. A full-grown wolf weighs from 70 to 80 pounds. He has an enormous head and a mouth armed with many tremendous fangs and teeth. He is generally very lean, but exceedingly muscular, of a gray color in summer and grayish white in winter when his fur is thick and long. His feet are remarkable for their size, 3 or 4 times larger than the feet of the largest dog, which they resemble in shape. Only the claws are much longer. Their large feet enable them to travel rapidly over deep snow that soon tires a fleeing deer that could easily run away from his enemy when the ground is bare. They usually hunt singly or in couple, but frequently the trail of a pack of 4 or 5 or even more is seen in the snow. They are widely scattered throughout the island, as a rule, but few in any one neighborhood. So you can imagine that Ohokami were both worshipped and feared. Remember I said they were thought to be a kind of messenger of the mountain gods, the Yamakami or Yamanokami? Well, it was also believed that they were great protectors. It was the wolf who preyed upon boar, deer, and nasty monkeys, and the like, which were all the animals that invaded and devastated the villagers' crops. The wolves were perfectly sated on these animals, and really had no need to attack humans. Wolves were powerful protectors, and lucky too. For example, wild boar were such a menace that people made charms called shishiyoke. Shishi being a name for inoshishi, or wild boar, and yoke meaning to keep away or go away. What made these charms strong was the bits of wolf used, teeth and hide, something you could carry around with you when you were traipsing about in the mountain paths. Ever been charged and gored by a wild boar? Well, not if you have your wolf fang charm. Even mountain ascetics or yamabushi would roam the mountains with wolf fangs tucked into their robes. I didn't know about this, but Julian's girlfriend told me about one of these charms she'd found on Yahoo auction that was sold for thousands and thousands of dollars. It's not always just a single tooth, but the entire palate or the upper or lower jaw that is used for a talisman. So all the teeth. I'd like to believe that those were collected after finding a wolf that had died a natural death and that some kind of ceremony was performed. So except for that, for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years, life in your village with wolves in the hills was a nice symbiotic relationship. Wolves hunted the annoying animals that wrecked your crops, and you worshipped or at least paid them their due respect. Everything was fine until extinction. The Hokkaido wolf is said to have gone extinct in 1889, and the Honshu wolf in 1905. Those are the agreed-upon dates, although there have been claims of sightings and the occasional photograph of a wolf or a mountain dog since then, but not recently. So what happened? Several things, it seems. One is that both rabies and distemper were absent until the mid-1700s. Rabies showed up in 1736 in eastern Japan. Not only did these diseases hurt the population, now you have animals suddenly acting aggressively toward livestock and the farmers who kept them. In 1742, the first professional wolf hunters appeared. There was also an uptick in the superstition that wolf parts gave protection and brought good luck, so they were hunted for their teeth and hides and skulls. Also, the Meiji Restoration happened. In 1868, Japan opened up and foreigners came in. Americans. Why not impose agricultural reforms? Why not assign an American rancher from Ohio named Edwin Dunn to fix everything? Yes, ranches, that's what Hokkaido needed more of. Suddenly, wolves were the bad guys. The Meiji government declared them a yugai doubutsu. Yugai is poisonous or toxic, and doubutsu means animal. Wolf killing became a national policy. Mr. Dunn was also put in charge to get rid of them by using strychnine-laced bait that was set out for the wolves, both the Honshu and the Hokkaido ones. So that these stoic protectors for thousands of years, worshipped, feared, but respected, were all wiped out. It's believed the last Japanese wolf was captured and killed in a village in Nara Prefecture, January 23, 1905. Some believe they survived on the island of Sakhalin, that Russian island above Hokkaido, until 1945. There have been sightings throughout the years, but it's believed that they are either hoaxes or feral dogs that have been misidentified. The Japan Times has a great series of articles called Japan's Lost Wolves that talks about them and even the hopeful people who are dedicated to trying to find some who might still be existing deep in the mountains away from pesky humans. But the wolf is not forgotten. There still exist shrines dedicated to the Okami, and like my friend and his daughter, people still visit and pay their respects. I'll talk more about the shrines, legends, and other wolf lore in part 2, next episode. So I'll leave you for now. If you'd like to try a daily doodle in October of some of the yokai and ghosties from past episodes, I'm putting up B's list with links on the website. It'll be called Uncannytober 2022. A heads up, October 1st will be the Umibozu, episode 20. And October 2nd will be the Kuchisake Onna, episode 23. So get your pencils, pens, paintbrushes, or anything at all Ready. Let's draw creepy things. Thank you so much for listening. Please consider becoming a patron if you'd like. For only $5 a month, you get obscure monthly folktales that I don't talk about on the show, and occasional recipes, MP3s of those nature sounds you hear in the background with no talking. The other day, I found some neat information about fox money, or kitsune no koban, and I put up a little blog post about that. I'm also going to put up some photos of the wolf shrine that I visited too. So there is extra content over there if you'd like. It's easy to find, just search for Patreon and Uncanny Japan. Thank you so much for listening. Stay safe and stay well. And I will talk to you more about wolves next time. Bye-bye. You've reached the end of the show, and I just want you to know how much we appreciate you listening and supporting us. Any subscribing, reviewing, and gushing to your friends, family, even random strangers, really does help keep us going. If you have the means and you want to help a little more and get a little more, we are making extra content over on Patreon. All for only $5 a month. Or, if you like to read horror, you might be interested in my Bram Stoker-nominated short story collection, The Carp-Faced Boy and Other Tales. 本当にありがとうございます。Thank you again, and I'll talk to you real soon.